The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Playoff Podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined by JJ Cooper.
Hello.
A lot of catch up for over the weekend from JJ, some great games. I want to start with Braves-Dodgers. I think we all agreed this was the series that was probably going to be closest slash most exciting. It didn't look that way.
I'll say, Yankees-Red Sox is right there with that.
So. It is.
NL won, which we now know. I mean, it's not a very easy competition to be the most compelling NL, competitive NL series.
Well, for a while it didn't look that way, right? The Dodgers went out. We saw two veteran lefties really take advantage of an overly eager, overly aggressive young Braves offense. Mm-hmm. They go back to Atlanta last night. Acuna hits the grand slam. It's 5-0. The Dodgers battle back. Freddie Freeman, the vet, comes through with the big home run late in the game. That proves to be the game winner. And Aroldis Vizcaíno does a little bit of an escape dance there to get out of the ninth.
Those were some great at-bats, too. Because he wasn't, there are times where it's like, oh, a guy gets in trouble, and you're like, Walker Buehler's one inning of disaster. There was a point where he really did. It was just he couldn't find the zone. Aroldis Vizcaíno, there was never a point in that inning where he couldn't find the zone, but it was a 10-pitch at-bat for the,
Jock Peterson's was.
I mean, it was foul off. No, you're not going to get a fastball by me. You're going to have to show me you can locate your breaking ball in the zone, which he couldn't really. And then, Max Muncy, after that it was great at-bat by Peterson, and it was Justin Turner. Then Justin Turner, really good at-bats. But it did get into a fascinating situation.
But that's interesting because you're right. Jock Peterson had a great at-bat. Justin Turner obviously getting on base there is huge. And Max Muncy started with a great at-bat, laid off some pitches mm-hmm. with some wicked movement on the outside. But he did swing through
yes.
ball four for strike three. Then you saw Manny Machado strike out swinging.
Who had the worst at-bat of those at-bats.
On a wild pitch. And then Brian Dozier goes fishing for strike three as well. So the Dodgers having some serious issues with runners in scoring positions, swinging it, a ball for strike three in all three of those at-bats. It's one of those things that has been an issue for them over the entire course of the season, kind of reared its ugly head again in a key spot.
The thing I'll say, on Muncy's, that was not, and again, I understand it nowadays, there was running, he was trying to win the game there. He was not trying to say, okay, let me get short. It is a philosophy nowadays, and I understand the philosophy. It worked out very well for them a lot of times. But that was I'm going to hit the ball very hard, very far, which, by the way, also has worked very well for Max Muncy all season and in the series.
And that's, by the way, that's been the Dodgers' philosophy
yes.
as well, team-wide.
But that was, I'm surprised, actually, on the broadcast because they were, trying to get into, the talk of the small. That was a situation where, shortening up may have been also useful. Although, again, the argument can be, I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, because also shortening up there could be you hit the double play that basically means that the inning is no longer nearly as dangerous.
See, I don't have an issue with the Muncy at bat. He got ahead, laid off some tough pitches, took a fastball in the inner half, and then Vizcaíno just made a great pitch. Mm-hmm. Fastball, that velocity, tailing off the outside, that's a great pitch. The Machado and Dozier at-bats, though, are problematic. Those were just two poor at-bats. They were both clearly not the type of quality at-bats you want with runners in scoring position. Particularly even, Machado is going to be the face of it because he swung through a wild pitch.
But the runners were on second and third after that.
Right. I thought Dozier's at-bat in particular was really poor. And, it's not the way you want to end a game. But the good news is the Dodgers are still up. They have another shot today.
And the other thing the funny thing about that game was that because, baseball's a crazy game, with the exception of one inning, the Dodgers felt like that they were the team. The Braves basically had that one inning, and then, yes, they got the Freeman homer. But when you have a game where it turns from being 0-0 to 5-0 in the span of what felt like about 12 seconds, which it did in that game, and then the entire rest of the game is the team up 5-0 just trying to hang on, which, and they did. I mean, it was hang on because it was Newcomb, followed by Gossman, followed by Freed, followed by Toussaint.
And the first three guys all failed, which I do think is the concerning thing for the Braves. Newcomb gets this big lead, walks three guys, gets yanked. Gausman comes on, gives up a couple runs. Freed comes on, hangs the curveball that Muncy hits
Toussaint
a mile.
Got, you know, sitting there and it's like, whoa, the bases got loaded real quick here, you know. And
Touki Toussaint got the win and did not pitch all that great.
No.
I will say that the Braves, it's encouraging. You obviously don't want to get swept. You get that first one in their home park. But it's not necessarily a win where I feel like you can look at it and say, oh, man, this is going to turn the series. As exciting as the Freeman home run was and Vizcaino getting out of it in the ninth, this was a game. There was a lot of shakiness. And I do think that it's going to be tough for them to do this two more times.
That said, don't disagree, but that said, they did get they get another game at home very quickly. And the reality of it is that this is what this Braves team is. Like, when you talk about it, it's funny. Okay, so we had Newcomb start. Okay, Newcomb from the start of the season was going to be one of their guys for this year. And he had a great first half and tailed off in the second.
After that 134-pitch outing, it was all downhill from there.
Okay, so then you go past that, and then you say, okay, after that, Gossman, who does a trade acquisition, who was really good, it's kind of unusual in some ways that they're pairing the two of them up instead of, you know, but okay, whatever. And then you're going to Freed and Toussaint, guys who, you know, are rookies who were not, you would not necessarily have said.
I'm putting them in a high leverage situation in a
postseason
game.
But again, they're among the best options they have, so I follow why they're doing it.
Both can ramp up to 98. You like that power stuff in a situation.
But this is a team right now that is depending on guys. They do not. That bullpen right now has almost no one that you just say, okay, it's over. Whereas, like, you know, again, that segue into the first series. Whereas the Brewers have three guys especially, where you're like, no, it's over. In that game and in that series, it was something where that Brewers bullpen. Now, the Rockies, it's a terrible time to have one of your worst slumps of the season. And they, if you're the Rockies, there's no part of this where you go, if we just had this. No, you have to score runs to win a series. But
the Brewers have given up three runs in four games if you count that NL Central tiebreaker. 37 innings, 17 hits. They're giving up less than a hit every two innings. It's been, when Jolys Chacín has started, it's been great starts. Wade Miley gave him 4 2/3, a shutout baseball yesterday.
Yay, 4 2/3, good job.
I know. Our standards have really changed.
I agree, this is exactly, they don't need, they are not, when they hand Wade Miley the ball, they are thinking anything beyond 15 outs is like bonus time.
It has been exceptional. And look, we knew that Josh Hader was a stud. Jeremy Jeffress, if funny enough, because he had a little bit of the rocky outing, mm-hmm. no pun intended, was kind of the one guy this series who had a little bit of an elevated ERA out of that bullpen, but he's still a stud. Joaquin Soria has been excellent since coming over the trade deadline. Corbin Burns has been great since getting called up. And oh, by the way, Corey Knebel's back. This is a guy who, by the way, was the traditional closer.
And
is
he's
absolutely nasty when
he's right.
He's posting
Hader-like numbers lately. I mean, so, again, you look at this right now, and
when you can go Soria, Knebel, Hader, with Jeffress and Burns right there as well, it's really...
You don't need... Again, the world we live in now, you don't necessarily need a dominant... It used to be, and when I say used to be, I'm thinking all the way back, you know, 5 years ago, that you would look at a team and say, if they don't have the number one and number two starter, well, there's just no way that you're going to be able to win in the playoffs because it's aces... It's the top front of the rotation guys are what wins you titles.
And I mean, a strong bullpen has always been a big consideration
But it always was the second part with that. And really, I would say if we said the prototype for this was the Royals, which lost to the true number one at the time in their first World Series because
I'll go back. I'll go back further to the 2002 Angels when they had K-Rod, Percival, Donnelly, Weber. They were getting five innings from all their guys as well.
That is true. But again, that at that point it didn't take, I would argue. You know, like you did not, not that there was not, I mean, because again, if you want to go, we can also say like you can even go back to the A's, but the A's, it was really like hand it to them in the sixth or seventh. But they still had Dave Stewart. They still had Bob Welch. They had guys at the front. But when I look at that Royals team, when you say, okay, depending on the year, they had more threes and fours than they had ones and twos. And then you go to the Indians, who then because of injuries, it was like, okay, really, they were kind of the prototype of, we'll bullpen our way through this like it's a Sunday afternoon in a college series. And then you get to now where it's like, you know, oh yeah, Brandon Woodruff's going to start game one of the division series. We'll follow him up with Corbin Burns and we'll be in great shape, which they were. They were in great shape. But I guess the question I would ask you that, I mean, we'll put a little valediction speech for the Rockies, which was good season, very good season. And I do feel like that this is a team that there's no reason that they shouldn't be this good, if not better, next year.
As you mentioned that, I posted something on our site, baseballamerica.com. You can check it out, seeing which teams have the most homegrown players on Division Series rosters. And while it's not, you know, a guarantee of anything, it's generally a promising indicator. The Rockies had the most homegrown players of any team in the postseason this year. 14 guys on their 25-man NLDS roster were homegrown.
Easily the most homegrown starting pitching rotation. I mean, it's not even close.
And that's including the fact they didn't include John Gray on their postseason roster. So the Rockies are in good shape. I do feel like some of what, you know, look, they've been to the postseason back-to-back years. They have a lot of the pieces to get back there, at least through next year, as long as they still have Nolan Arenado. One of the things that's going to be interesting to me and what they should do is I would kind of like to see them get off of, we're giving some at-bats to some veteran guys who really aren't that good anymore, but we're giving them at-bats. And they have
Ian
a chance
Desmond?
This offseason. Well, they can't get out of the Ian Desmond contract, but Gerardo Parra has a team option at the end of this year. They should let that go. Carlos Gonzalez is gone after this year. They should probably let that go. Matt Holliday, who signed a minor league deal.
That was just a free talent on the side of the street.
But you look at it in the postseason, you'll say they started Parra and Holliday while David Dahl was on the bench.
Which is, you know, although Dahl did have...
Dahl had struggled at the end, but yes. On the whole, especially at home, David Dahl hit really well this season. So I think for me, if the Rockies can start giving some of those at-bats to some of those young homegrown guys, Ryan McMahon, Garrett Hamps, DJ LeMay, who's leaving as a free agent, you know, McMahon, Hampson, Dahl.
Well, I mean, we don't leave off. I know he hadn't made it up yet, but...
Brendan Rodgers is coming.
I mean, again, what they now have, which is a good situation, is to me, going forward, you have three middle infielders for two spots. Because Garrett Hampson can play both. Brendan Rodgers can play both. And really, Trevor Story can play both. So you have three guys, and to me, that's the you want that. Especially, you know, Trevor Story's had some injury issues at times. I mean, and is a streaky guy.
He's had some strikeout issues at his worst, yes.
Yeah. And so having those three guys, that gives them a better middle infield. And really also, the reality is and there are some big enough bats there that even if there is a matchup, again, I know they're probably going to keep playing Ian Desmond at first base because he's got that contract. But, right, I mean, this is a team that has some potential to help that. You know, again, if Brendan Rodgers can produce half of a Trevor Story rookie season coming up next year.
It'll help.
It'll help. You know, and again, it's a very different player than DJ LeMahieu in a lot of different ways. Like, it's going to be a very different approach. It's not going to hit for the average of DJ, you know, LeMahieu, but at the same time, he's going to definitely hit for more thump, you know, all that. But this Brewers team, to kind of wrap up on the NL, the Brewers, right now, again, you know, is this a team that... Are they the favorite? Again, it's easy because they just swept their series and we don't know who's going to come out of the other one yet. But with this bullpen, is this, I mean, versus the Dodgers or the Braves, are they to you the NL favorite?
You know, it's tough. You know, you mentioned they swept this series. They've won 11 straight. This goes back into the regular season. And a lot of it is who's playing well at the right time. The Brewers are absolutely doing that. I still think, and I do want to get your prediction on this, I do think the Dodgers beat the Braves today. They go back to the Rich Hill veteran lefty who I think will be able to take advantage of the Braves again. I think the Dodgers win today. Again, I picked the Dodgers before the season to win the World Series. I picked them at the start of our playoff podcast to get there. So I feel like I do need to stick with them. But I do think that if you've been underestimating the Brewers because, because they're not a lot of household names.
But the funny thing about is they have the MVP. If it wasn't for Christian Yelich being the MVP, I mean, Lorenzo Cain on another team would be an MVP candidate.
He's been excellent.
You know, I mean, this is a team that has
a lot of good players.
But I will say Christian Yelich now is a star.
Agreed.
And Lorenzo Cain has had a sustained run long enough where you'd say, if he's not a star, he is the perfect, like, wingman to a star, like, because he's been really good. And then this is an incredibly deep lineup.
Well, Eric Kratz and Orlando Arcia at the bottom take away from that.
Wait. Eric Kratz had more RBIs in that series than the Rockies.
He had more hits than the Rockies. Eric Kratz did have a great series, but the additions of Mike Moustakas, we saw him have the walk-off hit, that was a big addition as well. Travis Shaw is one of the more underrated infielders in baseball, I feel like. So you're right, there's enough weapons here. Again, I probably would still pick the Dodgers, but that's based on precedent. If the Brewers at this point beat whoever they play, I don't think anyone can and should consider an upset because, hey, they have the most wins. They have home field.
Right. This is the...
This is the one seed here. Yeah. So it's weird to consider an upset. What about you?
I mean, again, there is an advantage also. You know, you can argue the momentum thing and all, but there is an advantage of having now... The thing with a bullpen like that is in the playoffs, especially if you sweep a series, they're all going to be rested.
And bingo.
I know it's a 7-game series, but there are enough off days there that you can use and almost abuse those guys in the NLCS, and you're not going to actually wear them out. Now, for next year, it may be that you wore them out, but the reality of it is that everyone in that bullpen on game one is going to be, again, ready to go. Do you need two for me? I can give you two. And the reality of it is each of those guys can really kind of be counted on for 2 to 3 innings over game one and game two, and then you roll into game three, and they're ready to go again. And so if you're the Brewers and you say, we have four, let's take Corbin Burnes out and say you can expect, let's work Corbin Burnes in. If you say between those, the murderer's row of relievers that we talked about, plus Corbin Burnes, between the first two games of that series, you can say, okay, we feel like that we have 12 innings, 10 innings at least out of those guys in two games. You're not asking a lot from everyone else on that staff.
The other thing is they have a lot of fresh arms. Gio Gonzalez was on the roster. He didn't pitch a single inning this series. Freddie Peralta on the roster.
And Gio did get up, if I remember right, did get up in the pen one time. But I don't think,
Freddie Peralta, not used at all this year. So they have some fresh arms, too, in case they do need some length, depending on how they want to deploy
obviously
them.
Obviously, if you're the Brewers right now, the main thing you're rooting for is you want the Braves to win because of a couple reasons. One, it lengthens the series. But two, it then puts the Dodgers, again, these things don't really matter that much in the playoffs, but I really think they can get overemphasized. But you want the Dodgers to have to decide who's throwing game five because, is it going to be you or is it going to be Kershaw? And if it is you, you are hoping that if you're the Brewers, that spreads a little discord because Clayton Kershaw's always been the guy. Again, Clayton Kershaw's not the guy who's going to storm off if that happened. Clayton Kershaw will say, I'm ready to go for you in game five, whatever inning you need. But it is something where, again, if you're the Brewers, you are obviously rooting for a long series.
Yeah, for me, it's more about, more than any of that, I think it's more about the fact that whoever wins would have to fly back to Los Angeles, then fly over to Milwaukee again. You start to get some of that travel fatigue in. Again, I would pick, if the Braves pull it out, I'd pick the Brewers to beat them. If the Dodgers pull it out, I feel like I'd have to stick with the Dodgers, but we'll see.
We had the little siesta for the AL yesterday.
Jump back in it today.
And early. I mean, we're recording this. We're endeavoring to get this up before game one starts because today, it's
1:30 Eastern, 10:30 yep. Pacific. Astros, Indians. Let's get right to it. Sweep or no sweep?
At this point, I think you got to probably say sweep. I mean, again, the one game does not decide it, but it is something where if you like the Indians in this series, you said, okay, ace versus ace in game one. If you, you know, if you've got Corey Kluber, you feel good you can go against anybody. And it did not work out that way. And once that happened, then you say, okay, the rest of this series, it's going to be tough for them to ever have, you know, again, you were facing Garrett Cole in game two. And I know they did have an early lead, but the reality of it is that
they had one swing, Francisco Lindor's home run, and after that, they were shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end
which
of the day,
which was basically the story of yesterday's Braves, you know, Dodgers game, the difference being they had two swings and Ronald Acuna's swing came with the bases loaded. But yes.
I will say, so I said, I'm picking the Dodgers to win today in the Braves game. You didn't make your pick on that, but.
No, I think the Braves do it to take it to a game five.
I am thinking the Indians win this one today. They're back home. Mike Clevenger is on the mound. I do like that matchup as much as I respect Dallas Keuchel. I do think the Indians take this one, but at the end of the day, the Astros pull out this series.
You're asking a lot to say you're going to beat them three times.
Exactly. And the other part of it, too, is, you know, we mentioned, again, to jump back real quick, that the Brewers-Rockies matchup matched up really well for the Brewers. Great pitching staff, offense that's really not very good. And while the Indians, you know, statistically, if you look over the course of the season, they finished in the top six in all three slash line categories. You drill a little deeper into that offense, it's been so top heavy with Brantley, Ramirez, and Lindor carrying the load, and a lot of the guys below them not doing a whole lot for a lot of the year. Edwin had a poor year. He had a strong finish, so the final numbers look good over it.
He's gotten hotter as Ramirez got colder.
Which, you know, is nice to see, but you have that happen. And then, again, whoever they've put in center field has not been productive this year. Yan Gomes has been fine. But this is a lineup that it's a lot of names, Yonder Alonso, Edwin Encarnacion, Yan Gomes, et cetera, that really were not that great this year. And you roll that up against, again, the best pitching staff in baseball, the best starting staff in baseball. It's just not a good matchup. And so, again, the Indians are a very good team. They've got stars. But you're right. It was going to be hard for them to win this series to begin with. To go down 0-2, I just don't see it. As much as, again, I think they will win today, but I think by tomorrow the Astros punch their ticket to the ALCS.
And I mean, again, that at this point it's just really hard to see them winning three in a row, which takes us to the series that is living up. I mean, again, if you're a TV executive, Yankees-Red Sox is the series you always dream of, as we know by, I mean, if they're playing, they're going to be on a national primetime game.
Didn't you miss these four-hour Yankees-Red Sox games?
I will say this, though. I will say it. For all that,
they're exciting. They're fun.
It is something where they're awesome crowds, they're awesome matchups, and it is something where Boston is an amazing team, 108 wins. But I do feel like this is a coin flip. I mean, again, it's 1-1, but you do look at it and you say, okay, I have more questions with Boston the rest of the series than I do with the Yankees, partly because are you going to throw David Price back out there?
Are you going to throw David Price out there? And how good do you really feel about that bullpen?
They didn't feel good about it. They didn't feel good about it going into this series. I mean, they didn't.
And now,
okay, Craig Kimbrell, what else?
Workman and Barnes each made a key pitch to get out of jams in game two, but their overall outings were not all
that
pretty.
Whereas with this Yankees bullpen, you feel like, again, it's like we're talking about with the Brewers, where you're saying, if you're talking about, okay, over the last three games, let's say this goes five, you have, for those three games, I would say that you feel comfortable that you have 15 of those essentially. Okay, there's going to be 27 innings if this goes, you know, I'd say 15 to 18 of those could be handled by the Yankees bullpen without overtaxing guys. And that's
probably fair. I will say that one of the biggest things that you just feel good about where you are for the Yankees right now, Aaron Judge is healthy. There's no question about that. Three home runs and three postseason games. Gary Sanchez, if he can continue to not make defensive mistakes and look like the Gary Sanchez of 2016-2017 again, it's a whole nother dynamic as well. I do think this one is going five. This was an evenly matched series given the Red Sox struggles with the bullpen, and given the Yankees' return to health, I do expect the Yankees to win tonight. I think the Red Sox take game four, and we go to game five, and that's where it gets really wild.
It's, again, it's been a great series so far, and this is, I mean, again, like you said, the thing about it is that this is the series that it's a power-oriented series. If either team is trailing by one or two and they get a runner on, you feel like this game could be tied in the next second because, especially with this Yankees lineup, if you haven't looked at this Yankees, the production, we talk about, you know, when you look at the home runs for this team, and you're looking at it, again, like my brain, which was built on baseball in the late 70s into the 80s, my brain shuts down when I look at this, when you're like, this guy has 10 home runs, this guy has 15, this guy has 20, this guy has 25, this guy has 25.
See, I came up with the late 90s, so that's what you have to win.
Yes,
if you don't have that, you're not winning.
Yeah, this is normal. I mean, this is what you expect. And, you know, bench guys for them, it's like, oh yeah, you know, 12, 15 homer. It's insane.
We saw that even in game one. You mentioned 5-0 leads not being safe. Red Sox go up 5-0 through three innings. And even then, you sit there and you say, this isn't over. And the Yankees came back, they got within one. Ultimately, Craig Kimbrell rebounded from the Aaron Judge home run and shut it down. Then you come out the next day and the Yankees start going yard. And one of the other things, too, we've talked about ad nauseum. The Yankees' offense outside of Yankee Stadium was very mediocre throughout the entire year in all three slash line categories. But you get this offense in that bandbox that is Yankee Stadium, and let's not kid ourselves, it's a bandbox. They're a whole different animal. For them to go in and split in Boston, to return home where this offense really flourishes, I do like the position they're in
and
quite a bit.
And the other thing that they have there is, and they have a bullpen, when you're playing in a park where any fly ball can leave the yard.
Especially
to right field. One of the best things is if you have a pitching staff that just doesn't let them hit the ball. And they have, again, they have a bullpen where, I mean, we live in a strikeout age, but they have a bullpen that can pile up massive. And they have a starting staff to be on. Like, again, Tanaka, they worked it out well. You know, Tanaka is going to give up a home run pretty much wherever he pitches. Tanaka, you know, I think fits better to go on the road to pitch right now than he does at Yankee Stadium. But Severino's a guy who, again, is great in the playoff series to basically say, give us a really strong five innings.
Well, right now you've got Severino versus Eovaldi tonight, two power arms who might not last that long.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, what's your over-under on, you know, on that? Like
5 innings for Sevy and 4 for Eovaldi?
I was going to say, I think if you got 9 between them, you'd be like, wow, they really pitched deep.
And then you get the veterans tomorrow, Sabathia and Porcello, who are kind of the opposite
yes.
of Severino and Eovaldi at this point in their
and
careers.
And then game five, again.
It's going to be fun.
I mean, I was going to say.
Game five, Chris Sale.
It will be definitely Sale.
And then do you go Jay Happ again after what happened in game one? You might have to.
I mean, again, I do think you're hoping that if you're the Yankees, that Sabathia gives you enough innings to where basically that is almost a bullpen game. You know, and again, when you're playing for your season on the line, it can be two here, you know, you figure out ways to do that.
Either way, it'll be fun.
It will be very fun.
And today especially, game at 1:30, game at 4:30, game at 8:30. Look at me quoting Eastern Standard Time.
And the thing about it is they all are on the East Coast because that's why we have the 1:30, because you can't start a game when they're playing on the East Coast at 10 o'clock at night.
They're in Cleveland. Get that Central Time Zone, 12:30 local. So it'll be fun. Well,
we thank you if you're a Baseball America subscriber. Today's one of the days I'm especially thankful because you let us do this. And it's our jobs to be here working but keeping an eye on that playoff game. That's work. That's pretty full. Cool. So thank you again if you're a baseball subscriber. I do want to remind you with that is it is a great time to subscribe. We are rolling out short season and rookie league top 20s. Northwest League, I believe, up today. New York Penn tomorrow. And then we jump into the rookie leagues. And I do think that that is a perfect kind of prep as we get ready to roll out team top 10s. Because when we do the International League top 20, we love doing it. But when we tell you that Eloy Jimenez is really good. That's not something where you're going, ooh, wait, Eloy Jimenez can hit. Good to know. But when you get down to the AZL, the Pioneer League, and the GCL, you have to be the hardest hardcore of hardcore to have some insights and knowledge about the guys that we're writing reports of, you know, and our guys really dig deep on those. And so there's a lot of great information coming out that, you know, with those this week. We also have, we've already dove in, but we'll have more with the 2019 draft. We have a high school top 50 with reports coming up very soon. There's a lot of fun stuff coming up at baseballamerica.com.
And please go ahead, if you like our podcast, go ahead and give us a rating on iTunes or whatever method you're listening on. We're going to keep rolling these out, these playoff podcasts every day. We'll have a pro podcast every Friday, college podcasts. We're ramping up the podcast scene here at Baseball America, so go ahead and let us know how we're doing. For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Enjoy another day of the postseason, everybody.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.